Hi, this is Bruce Boxleitner, and you're listening to Then Is Now podcast.
Rise and shine, my sinners. When Father Evil starts his day, he gets a little deadly. Deadly Grounds coffee has the richest, smoothest flavor you'll find anywhere. It's sinfully delicious. Once you go deadly, you never go back. Order yours at GetDeadly.com. Coffee's so good, it's scary.
What kind of a sick school is this?
Things are afoot at the Circle K.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
You got spunk. I hate spunk.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Alrighty then.
How you doing?
Back off, man. I'm a scientist.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Say hello to my little friend.
I love to smell a great plum in the morning.
What are you people? On dope?
Stop whining.
I got a clap on deck that can choke a donkey.
Hey!
Who is your daddy?
I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Can I do that?
I'll be back.
A dynamite!
Show me the money!
Don't!
Up your nose with your rubber hose.
A what?
I'm sailing!
You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Is looking at you, kid.
We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.
Come to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
I love it when a plan comes together.
What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
We're on a mission from God.
Hello and welcome to the Then Is Now podcast, the show in which we discuss pop culture of the past and help you, the listener, introduce the young people in your life to all the cool stuff they missed out on. Joining me, of course, is Chris Esper. It's been a while, Chris.
Yes, it has been a while. How you been?
Good. It's been, you know, just cranking away with work and stuff. Since we last recorded, you've been busy yourself. You've had a lot of stuff going on with your films, and why don't you tell the listeners all about it?
Sure. So, still working the day job with A&E Networks, working on a couple of reality shows, far as film work goes, yeah, still pumping out a lot of different projects, working as a cinematographer, as an editor. A film I had shot last year called She Who Dared has been like in the festival circuit. That was directed by Gabrielle Rossin, and that one's been doing very well. But I'm also right now working on my next short film and writing a feature. But, you know, outside of that, there's also personal life stuff. Since we last talked, I got engaged. So, you know,
congratulations.
Planning the wedding. Yes, thank you. So that's been a lot of fun. No complaints here.
Awesome. Oh, man. So, folks, for me, one of the things that I've been working on the last couple of months is redesigning the website, havenpodcasts.com. So check it out, folks. It now includes a ton of news articles. We also managed to get ads on it. So if any of you visiting our site, if you could click on some of the ads, that would help fund this show. But just give us your two cents. Tell us what you think. So in and around all of our blogs and our shows, like I said, we've got a lot of cool news items. We've got different categories like horror news, sci-fi news, UFO news, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. So check out havenpodcasts.com. All right. So joining us once again today on today's episode are George and Gene. And they're here to discuss the 2024 April Ghoul's Drive-In Monsterama being held at the Riverside Drive-In in Vandergrift, Pennsylvania on Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th. Now, when we did the interview, Chris couldn't join us until a little bit into it, so you'll hear him pop into the show in the middle of a conversation with George and Gene, and we had a fun time talking all about the April Ghoul's extravaganza. Class is in session.
I have a bad feeling about this.
How could I possibly be expected to handle school on a day like this?
Food fight!
Hey, you in my class?
I am today.
I think you should consider transferring to shop class.
Woo woo!
Now, very few students are severely injured in shop class.
Bueller.
When you were in school,
Bueller.
Did you ever cut class?
Bueller.
Yeah, I guess I did. Sure, most kids cut classes.
Good, sign this.
He's sick.
I get so lonely when I hear that third attendance bell ring and all my kids are not here.
7 years of college down the drain.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
You lack discipline. As long as I'm here, there will be no grades or gold stars or demerits. We're gonna have recess all the time.
Woo!
Go, play, and have fun now!
Okay, so George and Gene, welcome back to the show. Glad to have you guys.
It's always good to be on your show, Roger. It's our pleasure.
Awesome.
We love doing this, and we love that you keep promoting the show.
Awesome.
Yeah, very professional compared to the other ones we do. So.
But we're professionalism. Just thank you for keeping to support the Monsterama events and to come out. I know it's not an easy travel situation for you, but you always try to make it whenever you can. So
yep. We're nice. Going to be there this year, yeah. And the wife is going to drive. I have issues with my driver's license, but we're going to do it in, like we did the first time, we're going to do it in 2 5-hour shots. We'll do 5 hours, then hit
That's
a hotel,
the way to
and
do
then
it.
Five more hours.
Wow.
Right.
So so before we get into this year's festival, you know, we were at last year's in September. We loved it. We can't wait to go again this year. How did it go? What was the final result afterwards?
Successful.
Yeah, it was successful. I mean,
sold out. Everything went well. It went well.
They've been consistently, you know, the last few, I guess we've really reached the peak now because, it looks like it. You know, we've reached our target audience where this thing gets a really decent crowd, and
good.
No complaints. Actually, it was beautiful. I mean, even the weather. I think if I can't, you know, it's so weird because these things blur from year to year, every way so much. And I think the weather was pretty good last September, wasn't it? We didn't.
It was.
It wasn't that bad. Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. You know, it might have been a little chilly towards like 2 in the morning, but beyond that, it was fine.
That's expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that area. That's just the way it goes. It just, the temperature always just drops extremely at night, and, you know, very rarely does it cooperate, you know, but we all deal with it, and people deal with it.
Yeah, I'm always
I guess the regulars get used to it. Some people get scared about, like, some first-timers or people have never been get scared when they, you know, when they think about or hear about the weather. But I think for the most part, people just cope with it and they don't complain. And,
yeah,
right.
It's
right.
Never that bad. It's never that bad. It's, you know, people
right.
deal with it.
And it's funny, you know, around here, I'm of course up in Maine, and I'm up at usually like 3 or 4 in the morning, and it's always warmer at that time than like 7 o'clock. When 7 o'clock rolls around, I'm like, wait a minute, what the hell happened to the temperature? It just dropped.
That's interesting. That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever knew that. The thing about coastal life for me, when I spent a lot of summers at Cape Cod, and I hated the sun coming up at 4 o'clock in the morning. and it really did. I mean, you started hearing the birds at 3:30, and by 4 o'clock, there were hints of the light, and I think a lot of people that are landlocked, I mean, in the mid-Atlantic states don't realize how time changes with the sun and stuff so fast on the coast.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that used to drive me crazy about that, because it's like, I would stay up watching movies, you know, the goddamn sun would be coming up at like 4:30 in the morning, and I'm like, oh, this is not working. You know, I'm That's used funny. To, you know, the sun being, you know, different in the mid-Atlantic rather than on the coast. So I can only imagine what it's like in Maine. I mean, I spent time in Maine. I've been to Bangor and some of the other towns up that way, Cadillac Mountain, you know, a lot of it, up into Canada, actually. And it's beautiful. But, you know, again, it's so far. I need to get back up there. It's been over almost 20 years, I would think, since I've been to Maine. But it is wonderful. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not too far from the coast ourselves. We're probably like 35 minutes from the coast anyways. It's like I could never live any further away from the coast. I love the beach so much.
Yeah, I always feel weird when I vacation on the coast and then I come back and I feel very claustrophobic. But then I see what happens with all the weather and I think, okay, I'm better off. So you can have your hurricanes and your snowstorms, your nor'easters. I'll deal with my lake effect and be happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Holiday.
So I wanted to ask too about the September show. Were you still seeing the trend of more younger people showing up? Because you had mentioned that before.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely younger. It's definitely, you know, this show has been around since 2007, the September show, the September event, at least. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about a lot of history now because it's almost two decades. So we've had, you know, a lot of like what you would call old timers that were there at the beginning that kind of like some of them still come. Some of them fell off the map. And then over the years, we've gradually gotten like this. It seems like we've come into this path of where horror films have become really, really popular again. Drive-ins have become popular again.
Yeah,
and we're like seeing that growth, and because of that, people are discovering this event, you know, later than you know at different stages. Let's say like some people only found out about it 5 years ago. Some people only found out about it 10 years ago. Whatever the case may be, but and it's a lot of younger people that are gravitating to this show and. And I have to say, they're just amazing because they love coming out. They're like just wanting to have a good time and they're really game for the whole thing, the whole weekend. And that's why we try to appeal to you know, their tastes. Meaning, you know, when April kicked in, I had to prove that we started doing April over 10 years ago. I basically, the theater at first wasn't sure they wanted to do another one at the beginning of the season, which would have been, you know, which was April, you know, because we did September. And now it's like, well, let's do one at the beginning of the year if you're willing to. I had to really, you know, prove that we could bring in an audience. So I'm like, well, I have to, like, really do something different. And that meant bringing in, like, heavy hitters like Friday the 13th and Day of the Dead and The Burning and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
weren't like the normal, you know, Vincent Price 60s film or a Hammer film or like something like The Witchmaker or something more obscure. You know, we had to like really step up the game as far as like trying to get more people, more of a, you know, different kind of audience, and it definitely worked.
Like trying to reach a wider audience.
Yeah, well, I'm always trying to reach a wider audience. So it's like, I have to say, when I started this event, it's like I basically, in some kind of selfish way, I said I want to like play movies that I want to see
right
on the drive-in screen. Now it's like I have to, now, I mean, not even now, I mean, like this has been years now that I've been thinking, well, I have to really try to appeal to what people, you know, what fans want and what, you know.
I go to a lot of conventions here and stuff and just I'm active a little more in the, well, George doesn't do cons anymore. And with good reason, I barely do them myself. And I always tell George, this is trending, that's trending. You'd be surprised what the kids are watching now, which is super surprising. And sidetracking here and supporting what he says about the demographic growing, I'm constantly texting George telling him our t-shirts are showing up on people at all these conventions and these other events. So I'm seeing that happening, which I never saw before. You never saw mention of the events in Vandergrift or anything back in the day. And now we're seeing these people wearing our t-shirts all over the place. And if George lived local, he would have the same thing, which I do, which is people constantly now approaching me and saying, I know who you are from the drive-in. I recognize you. And
that's
I was at this convention. It really is. And I'm constantly texting him and saying, you're not going to believe this, because this is not something that we ever thought would ever happen, that there'd be this visibility where it became a brand name, that George actually created a brand name that people are now, you know, that you can see it. And a couple, I told him about this, and I really don't remember their names. Their picture's on the Facebook page. A couple had their first date last September at our show.
That's
and
awesome.
I was at Monster, or actually Horror Realm here in Pittsburgh the first weekend of March, and I'm standing there talking to vendors, and this couple comes up and they're staring at me, and the guy goes, hey, were you one of the guys from that drive-in show out in September at the Monsterama? And I said, yes, I am. He said, I wanted to tell you that we had our first date there, and it has meant so much to us that we had our first date there, and we'll see you guys in April. We're so excited about it. So this is what this has created. It's brought these people. You'd be surprised at the stuff that has come out of this. And I love to see that. I love to see the impact of this event on people and how it becomes part of their lives. And that's exactly what George is talking about, how it's become like this, a ritual thing for folks to go to every year. And
yeah,
it's growing every year. I mean, they may not come back every year, but then again, they may, because this is like an anniversary for them for a first date.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's a big memory. Like, we've all had our first dates at restaurants and, you know, things, bars or whatever. I don't know, where you meet people for cocktails, but I'm saying, to be able to say our first date was at your event and it meant more than you can imagine, and, you know, we love you guys for coming back. That was incredible. Incredible. And I took a picture of him right away, introduced myself, talked a little bit about George, and said, you know, I'm going to put your picture up on the webpage. And they said, absolutely. So that's what we want to see. That's the type of people that we love coming back, because we know that they're loyal and they truly appreciate the product and the work that goes into the weekend. And it's not something that's easy when George approaches these rentals for these movies.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to consider, because some stuff that we want to show is not available, or it's not available, or like, what's it with Universal, George? They're not always on the market. Like, they're available, but not all the time or something. I mean, he's the distribution king here. He can tell you how that works. I don't know that much about it, but, he picks and cherry picks to find the best stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so good, you know?
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, everything has to be licensed, and they're all coming from different, studios, companies. And, I mean, going back to what we're saying about, the younger people coming in, it's we've come to a point where I'm showing not excessively, but I'm showing stuff that we've shown before, and with this one, it's Return of the Living Dead, because we showed this one at the very first April Ghouls.
Oh wow!
And like I said, this is going back, you know, more than a decade, and that's a long time. And a lot of the fans that are coming now more there. So when you say that we're bringing it back, only a couple are going, oh yeah, I remember that from the first, you know, from. So if we bring something back, it's not because we're running out of ideas or because, you know, it's because we want to bring something back, because it's enough time has passed where it's like, well, you know, this is popular enough where we could throw it in. And when we showed it at the first April Ghouls, I think it was the third film in.
Wow.
For Return?
Yeah.
Yes, it must have been because I think.
Yes, and now it's Friday, you know,
Friday the Burning, and then that, correct?
Exactly. So we had Friday the 13th, the Burning, and then Return of the Living Dead. Now it's a headline film for Dead Night, but then you know, it's rounded out with you know, some older cult films to. Older cult zombie films or old you know, undead films, whatever you want to call them, in the shape of Death Dream and Messiah of Evil, because those appeal to you know, those appeal to maybe some older fans, I guess, and right, younger right. fans.
And that's what I was
I'm thinking.
Say.
Like when I look at this schedule, when I look at this particular Monsterama lineup, I'm thinking this is like the most cult. Cult-filled lineup that we have, meaning that like these, there's like some real genuine like ones that you would call cult classics in this, meaning that they have a big following. I'd say at least five of them are like films that have big cult followings, and then you can give an argument for the rest of them.
Yeah,
because you know, Return of the Living Dead definitely, and then Killer right. Clowns is a whole entity onto itself. I've been wanting to show that for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into that in 1 second. I just wanted to first of all say, you know, what a great service you guys provide by introducing people to these films Thank that you. They may not have heard of, but it also caters to folks like me who knows most of them. And it's just wonderful that you do that. And I think you know, that's how you're. You know, that's where your audience keeps coming from, because they're going, oh, I never heard of that. I want to see that. And but it's paired up with one that they had seen and they liked. So it's, you know, it's a win-win. So, all right. So you guys, the next April Ghoul's Drive-In Monsterama is here in coming up in April of 2024 at the Riverside Drive-In in Vandergrift, Pennsylvania on Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th. So yes, you touched on the George. You touched on the lineup here. We've got Friday the 26th. You've got Return of the Living Dead, Death Dream, Messiah of Evil, and The Children from which is from 1980. And is Death Dream that's from 1974, right?
Yeah, that's the Bob Clark film that came out in 1974. It was shot, I believe it was shot in 72, but it didn't come out.
It was shot
74.
In 72, but it didn't come out in 74. Correct.
So it's definitely got a more early 70s vibe to it. But it's celebrating its 50th anniversary. Blue Underground just made this new 4K scan available, and it's going to be they're going to re-release it as a UHD Blu-ray combo special edition in May.
And we get it like first. This, we have it first.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I've been in contact with them because I knew that they were going to be re-releasing it, and it seemed like it got delayed. I believe they were going to have it available sometime late last year, and it just kept. Of course, sometimes things get delayed. That's normal. And I didn't know if it was going to be available for us for April, but sure enough, they go no, because we're releasing it in May. On Blu-ray, and that's before they made the official announcement. They told me now it's public information, and they said, you know, we could definitely have that ready for April. And I don't believe anybody else has it, you know, booked the show. So yeah. I right now we could say that this is the premiere of this new 4K transfer of Deathstream. So I hope we're the first. It seems like it because it's only we're talking weeks away now, so yeah. It looks like we will be the first. I don't think anybody has it booked yet. So
nice.
Certainly
nice.
Not at a drive-in, anyway. If it would happen,
yeah, not definitely not at a drive-in.
If
yeah,
it would happen to show up a theatrical screening randomly, it would not be the first drive-in. It'll be us. So
yeah,
that's a awesome. Good thing, right?
And of the four films on the Friday lineup, that's the one I've never seen, Death Dream. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, yeah. If you're a horror fan, you have to see it. You have to see it. It's like essential.
You know, the three films that Bob Clark did, we've already screened the other. You know, we've screened Black Christmas and Children Shouldn't Play with Death. So this is like the third horror film. And actually, Bob Clark was involved with Deranged as well.
Oh wow!
So yes, which we showed. He didn't want to direct it because of the subject matter, so he had Jeff Dillon direct it. Yeah,
exactly. And Ormsby was involved in that, and that's also been screened in April Ghouls as well. The thing I wanted to tell folks when they see Death Dream is the strange similarities that sort of exist in the film that exist in the George Romero film Martin. There's just an interesting similarity with the way that he has a syringe, and, you know, I'm not going to spoil it, and some of the stuff that happens. I was watching it with a member from one of the cast members from Night of the Living Dead, and it was the first time she'd ever seen it. Halfway through the movie, she said, "You know, I think George Romero has seen this movie, because I can't believe the vibe similarity with, you know, with the way the situation is. You know, he's this young man that's sort of mysterious, and deaths start happening, and it does sort of have, in a way, a similar structure to Martin, but it's not the same story by any means, or you know, the way it plays out. But it's a very similar film."
Interesting.
And people should definitely keep an eye out for that when they see it, if they think it sort of has that Martin vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
And as you mentioned, you know, the first one on Friday the 26th is Return of the Living Dead, which, of course, was directed by Dan O'Bannon, who wrote Alien. And this is one of my favorites. I've seen this so many times. It's got, you know, Clu Gallagher, James Caron, Tom Matthews, Linnea Quigley. And it's just a hilarious movie from beginning to end, yet terrifying at the same time.
I've always found it a little upsetting. And, you know, I've never been this is the reality of the situation is I saw the movie in the theater when it came out, and I was obviously in the age group at the time that I was very alternative and punk and whatever, and it seemed like a great movie. But then over the years, with the confusion with more brains being something that zombies always say, and it didn't start until this, and when I became involved with the George Romero people, you know, getting the whole backstory on, you know, what happened with the writing of the film and how it got changed so many times, and the story. There's a big story about how Toby Hooper was bought in, and he wasn't on it, and then they did this and they did that. I mean, it went through so many revisions before the final product. But that being said, we hosted the cast members' reunion at the Living Dead Weekend, which is, I do the box office for that, besides doing the work with George. And I got a chance to spend a lot of time with Tom Matthews, the cast of the film. And what I never really realized, but is the reality, is that this movie is the Night of the Living Dead for the 80s generation people.
Yes.
If you kind of look at it from that perspective, you gain a completely different respect for Return of the Living Dead. It's reflective of the values and the structure, the social structure that you see in the 1960 film with the people in the cabin. If you think about it, everyone in this movie fits an 80s category, like the Breakfast Club. There's a punk, there's preppies, you know, there's a rock and roller. You know, that's it's a generational film. It's reflecting characters that were all stereotypes in the 1980s. And I think that appeals to people of my generation that grew up with that. And with the new found popularity of the 1980s, if you've been on social media any time in the past, you know, few years, this is why this movie is absolutely a great choice to bring back, because it's relevant again.
Yeah.
Big time, you know, to this new younger audience.
It's got a huge following. It's one of those films that really needs no introduction with the audience that comes to this. You know, it's kind of like a roller coaster ride in that
absolutely.
It's just, you know, it's fun and it's a crowd pleaser, and that's why we're bringing it back, and that's why it's a headliner. You know,
absolutely.
They're thinking about it for years, bringing it back. I mean, it wasn't like when I would have never thought about repeating stuff we'd shown before, but it's not out of necessity. It's out of, you know, want. It's what we, you know,
right.
We just think, why not? You know, this is it's the time is right to bring that particular film back, and we might bring others back that we've shown before.
Yeah.
The only film that we've shown twice was Horror Express, because right. We showed it the very first Monsterama event in 2007, and it was a pretty faded print. And then a better looking DCP became available, and it just fit perfect for the Christopher Lee weekend that we did.
Right.
So nice. That was like a no-brainer thing to just throw that in, because again, it was like you're talking about over a decade later that,
sure.
You know, we're bringing it back. So it's not like, you know, we just showed this. Nobody complained.
Right.
A lot of people want things that we've shown before because they weren't there, or they just want to see them again. You know.
Yeah. Well, especially Return of the Living Dead.
I'm just throwing that fact in too about like the you know, repeating titles, which it's not going to happen often, but there will be a few here and there, I would think, going forward. But there's plenty of stuff to show. It's like, but, you know, getting back to Return of the Living Dead, it's a crowd pleaser. It's a great starter. I mean, I'd rather show, like, obscure, you know, I'd rather show, like, you know, stuff like Night of the Cobra Woman or some, but, like, that doesn't really bring in an audience necessarily.
Right.
You know,
right.
And the old timers, they don't come out anymore. So it's like, we have to really, like, we have to hook them in. And I, you know, we're definitely keeping faithful to the whole, you know, drive-in spirit and drive-in kind of films that are fun. And, you know, some of these might be more considered more popular, more commercial than others, but you know what? We're trying to bring in a crowd and we're trying to make people happy and have fun. So
yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Didn't John Russo co-wrote this too, right? He worked on the original Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, you know, and I know John very well, and John has, I guess, an available original script that he has for this film and everything, and I think that actually he and Russ Schreiner worked on this originally, the original concept for this whole, you know, the book or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, you go, Wikipedia has a really good account of how this thing changed, and I know George and I have talked about this. I don't know, Roger, you were buying Fangoria back in the day, or
yeah,
you know, really. Okay, well, they were always reporting about how there was a constant change with Dan O'Bannon coming in, and Toby Hooper was there, and he wasn't there,
yeah.
And this was this, and this was that. I mean, it went through so many revisions. I have to say, I was surprised that it took a comedic twist.
Right.
I've always been surprised about that. But, yeah, he worked. I mean, yeah, they did. Answering that, yes, they did. But I don't know.
Yeah, but not so surprising, considering that, like, you're talking about the era, right, of Freddy Krueger and you know, horror kind of with the, you know, with more satire and being more comedic with the one-liners and things like that. That was a very popular trend in the 80s.
I don't
see. So it's not totally surprising.
I've never read the original book or script or whatever, so I don't know what revisions were made that turned it into what it is today. Hmm. I mean, someone listening might have done that. I honestly admit I have not.
Yeah.
But I don't think what the final product was, it's on the screen now, would probably be that close to what they originally wrote. I think it'd be structured maybe the same. But I mean, there's all the telltale signs, and, you know, in Return of the Living Dead, that, you know, they talk about a VA hospital in Pittsburgh or something where they say it happened one time or
yeah,
or something like that. There's references in
and
that movie.
They reference the original film as being a true account.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Like an urban legend. And then the other thing that I want to mention too is there was a movie that just came out not too many years ago, The Dead Don't Die, I believe is what it was called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it really is similar because it takes place in Pittsburgh, but not really in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And they talk about people from Cleveland. The writers of that film, again, it's an interesting homage to the whole Night of the Living Dead, you know, background, which you didn't really see. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that they reference Night of the Living Dead and stuff, but more of an urban legend, kind of like, did you know this happened kind of thing?
Yeah.
Rather than saying, here's the factual evidence. And it isn't until you see the Easter eggs or the storage containers with the zombies in it that it dawns on these people that, holy shit, it really happened. And the government, of course, is trying to hide the fact that, you know, there was a zombie outbreak in the Pittsburgh area or wherever it was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? It's like at this point in the reality of Return of the Living Dead, it sort of was covered up.
Yes.
Successfully, and became like a local urban legend.
Yeah.
That's the impression I always had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than the legacy and lineage of the George Romero films, where you can see the progression of the Living Dead from night to dawn today. You know.
Yeah.
And survival and land and then diary, and then now there's another film coming out. It's being developed right now. There's actually quite a few George Romero projects that are being developed right now, which I'm not at liberty to talk about. So it's going to be a big year for George's material and legacy the next couple of years. There's a lot of stuff that's coming our way.
That's awesome.
And people, I think, are going to be really happy. Yeah, because it's a time to do it. I mean, it's still a great thing.
So, George and Gene, Chris has joined us. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I think your mic is muted, Chris. Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we go. Hey, sorry about that. I was coming from dinner, and was very slow service, but glad to be here. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're fine. Yeah.
Awesome. So, Chris, we just we talked about this past September's event that they did, and now we're discussing April, and we just did the first two films on Friday, April 26th, Return of the Living Dead and Death Dream. Have you seen either of those?
Sorry, say the first one again.
Return of the Living Dead?
Return of the Living Dead I saw a long time ago, but I got to be honest, I barely remember it.
Okay. So we're getting into the third one here, Messiah of Evil from 1973. I didn't think I had seen this one until I watched the trailer the other day and I realized I had it. That's the supermarket one, right?
Yeah, it has the famous scene in the supermarket. Yeah.
Right, but that's like a big scene in it.
That's one of the scenes people remember, you know, like this is one that, you know, it just got a re-release from Radiance Films on a Blu-ray. And it's immensely popular. It's as a cult film. It's just the popularity for this film has grown so much over the years. It's like one of those films that, like, I don't think it was on TV much. It was more of a, you know, when we, by the time Gene and I saw it, it was like a video rental in the 80s, because I don't think it ever played on TV back in the day. And I always, you know, I remember reading about it and, you know, that the, you know, it was from the same, the makers of American Graffiti and this and that. This was released at one time as Return of the Living Dead in this, you know, like maybe in the 70s or the early 80s. And I think maybe even Romero's people sued.
Oh, really?
It had a few different titles.
Or somebody like tried to like stop that. You know, I don't know if it was like, or they just said, you know, don't do that, like a cease and desist kind of thing. Because they had a lot of different titles. They had like dead people and
dead people. Yeah, it's a very undefinable film. It's like a dream state sort of thing, with a lot of weird scenarios. It's just I always feel like this film sort of fits into the atmosphere of Lamora, which we're still waiting to see, hopefully at some point on Blu-ray. And I also think it has the same quality as Let's Scare Jessica to Death, because
you have these
people that are thrust into this local phenomenon that's extremely strange that's taking place. And this film is there's just weirdness. It's just weird. I mean, I think I've always felt uncomfortable watching it from the beginning, but it just, and sometimes it feels like a giallo film. Sometimes it has like a weird Italian vibe.
Yes. Yeah, it does.
I don't know. I like a Fulci film. At least I think it does.
Yeah.
It's a big favorite for a lot of folks. That's for sure.
And then it also has that angle of the living dead coming back to life and eating people.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of vague within the film, 'cause you know, the way they portray the dead in this movie, it's just very unusual. It's not like typical. I mean, you know, again, you know, you're talking about the supermarket scene. There's also a famous, a known scene from the movie where it takes place in a movie theater.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the girl is going to see a movie, and she's all by herself, and the dead like kind of like just like slowly pile in and sit around her, and then, you know, they decide once they've pretty much taken over the whole theater, they attack her, and
nightmare.
You know,
it's literally a nightmare. It taps into that subconscious, you know, feeling that you have in a nightmare. You could see yourself having a dream where you go somewhere, like a movie theater, and you sit down, and then, you know, all of these people are sitting around you, and it turns out they're aliens or they're monsters, and if you move, they're going to kill you, and how do you get out of this situation? And ultimately in the dream, it becomes a fight or flight situation where you're struggling to escape an overwhelming problem. And that this film taps into that. I've had dozens of nightmares over the years like this, that are just weird dreams like that, where it's, you're in a normal situation that is out of control at the same time.
Yeah.
And you know, and isn't that what we all really, isn't that the primal fear that we really all have when we walk into a theater or anywhere, is you don't know anybody in that theater and it's a strange place. And, you know, think about it. Think about how that works. And strangers all come in and sit around you, but, you know, be scared of that for a minute and wonder if they're all monsters and they're going to kill you. You know?
Well, I was never scared of that until just now. Thanks, Gene.
Well, sorry, I'm a very esoteric horror person. But, I mean, think about it. Let's talk about that. I mean, there's a vibe through this film, like a subconscious sort of, you know, fate dream that takes place. I know there's an Italian term for it. I can't remember what it is, but, you know, where you just feel that kind of thing. It's your brain goes slightly askew to the left, and it's no longer in the norm, and it's a terrible situation. And this film is relentless about that. You never get comfortable in this film with any location or anything that takes place. There's always something in this movie that's slightly askew in every single scene, and it just keeps building and building and building until the finale of the movie. And even the ending is very questionable and weird. But it works, and that's exactly what our audience likes.
I mean,
that's the perfect vibe for a Monsterama event.
And then the fact that it's back to back with Death Dream, which
perfect.
There's a vibe. Yeah, Gene was like questioning whether Messiah was a good choice for third or just push it to the fourth film.
I showed it,
but I'm like, I was adamant. I was actually adamant about showing Death Dream and Messiah of Evil back to back, and I wanted Death Dream to be second. So that's how that turned out. And then I did see a couple of people comment on our page. I was like, oh, Death Dream with Messiah of Evil, that's just brilliant. So I'm not saying
I screened it at an outdoor screening. I screened Messiah of Evil with an outdoor screening of really diehard esoteric horror fans, and they could care less. They didn't like it. And I said to George, I go, you know, it might work for you, but when I screened this, and it was about 15 people, I said, they all looked at me like there was something wrong with me in this movie. I mean, literally, it was a triple feature that night. They went to 4 o'clock in the morning, outdoor screening on top of this mountaintop house where my friend lived, and it was in the middle of nowhere. You could do anything to 4 o'clock in the morning. And people all looked at me and said, what the F did you make us sit an hour and a half through that shit? And I was like, are you kidding me? It's the total vibe of all the screenings that we do. This is like something that you guys should have known or enjoyed. And they're like, I would never watch that piece of shit again. And I was like, what the? That's my personal experience. Personally, I love the film. I have it on Blu-ray. The same as he does, and it's a yearly viewing, 100%, usually in October. But I just had a bad experience screening it. People just were like, what the hell's wrong with you for showing us this film? I don't know.
That's funny.
This is something that's just been putting back into circulation, this brand new scan. It's available. I mean, there were some hard-looking prints out there, and now it's been available, and it's been making the theatrical rounds. I think this is the first time this version is playing at a drive-in.
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Pretty sure. Yeah,
that's awesome.
But you know, it's a drive-in movie for sure. And what a great cast of cult actors and actresses.
Yeah.
You know,
Michael Greer, Mariana Hill,
the B girls, and Royal Dano and
Joy Bang,
Elijah Cook. Yeah, Joy Bang is the girl in the theater.
Yeah,
she's great. You know, she's great. And Charles Dearcrop, who from Policewoman series, a familiar character actor, but everybody knows his face. He just passed away recently, but he has a small part as a garage attendant and gas station attendant.
Nice.
And just a great kid. Just, you know, really, it's like gothic 70s California, you know.
Maps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had no idea until looking at the show notes that we put together that Willard Hike and Gloria Katz had directed this. And of course, I know them from my generation for Howard the Duck, which is not a good example, yeah. But, you know, and of course, having written American Graffiti. So, I mean, you know, it's mm-hmm. So that's a nice that's a nice little bit of trivia. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, you know what else? Elaborating on that, on your comment, and it's the same exact thing with Bob Clark. Death Dream, Children Come Play with Death, Black Christmas, is very reflective of this pattern because he did Porky's and he did A Christmas Story.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell people that he did these films early in his career, they scratch their head and they go, that's so...
Well, his career took such an interesting shift because he went from doing those kinds of pictures to doing A Christmas Story. And then, you know, 20 years later from that, he's doing the Baby Geniuses movies. It's like what happened?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, there are three of the best horror films, too. So the man definitely was very, very talented across many, many different. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Right.
He also did, the Murder by Decree, which is kind of, it's a Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper.
Yep.
With a really big budget. I mean, it kind of comes off as an expensive-looking Hammer movie.
Right.
It's a gothic, period piece.
Mm-hmm.
And with Christopher Plummer as Sherlock Holmes and James Mason as Watson. Mm. And an all-star cast like Donald Sutherland, David Hemming, Susan Clark. I mean,
A lot of Toronto and Canadian talent in his films because he himself was a Canadian, I believe, Bob Clark.
Hmm.
Was he Canadian or did he just work in Canada? Yeah, I can't recall.
I'm pretty sure. I think I could be.
Or
I mean,
Florida. He was a Floridian.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He was Floridian too.
Oh,
okay.
Because Children was shot in Florida. Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things was shot in Florida, but then he
Bob Clark was born in New Orleans.
Oh, was he? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So we're all wrong, but
I know Black Christmas and Porky's and Christmas Story. I think all of them were shot in Toronto. I think.
Yeah, Christmas Story partially because I've been to the house in Ohio.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, you are right. It is parts of it were shot in Canada, and then and the rest in Ohio. Yeah,
that makes sense. Okay,
right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to jump in here. So, Chris, you had a couple questions, and George, you kind of touched on them at the beginning of the show, but Chris, why don't you go ahead and ask your questions, and we can get into a little bit more depth here.
Sure, yeah. So do you guys, do you screen the films before playing them at the drive-in, and like, how do you go about choosing the films that you're going to screen?
We've seen these movies for 1,000 years.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're not novices.
Yeah. I know, I think he meant checking to make sure they play correctly.
No, like that. No. DCPs, they have to play
correctly. They're mostly DCPs. If it's a 35mm print, I try to get a report, you know, and just hope for the best. The last 35 print we showed, like, you know, they'll sell you, we have no information about it, so it's like, all right, you just take a risk. And I've taken risks and things, and we've had films split and things, but the DCPs, you have nothing to worry about. And when it's like a new 4K, it's like, yeah. But there have been technical problems with stuff still. So I've been going, we go back and forth with the theater, and, you know, we've had to have little technical problems. So we never have to, like, pre-screen anything. Yeah. So, I mean, in that sense, there has been, but, you know, everything always comes through.
Sure.
But your question, the way I answered it, we've had people ask us, have you seen these films before you show it? How do you choose the films that you pick? And we're like, we've been watching these. We're old now. we've been watching these for a lot longer than we want to admit.
Well, like I was saying at the beginning of the show, too, it's like I have to choose things that I believe will be a crowd pleaser. Not necessarily like some of them, like not necessarily is like what I would want to see it in driving, but what I think would work at one of these shows, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I want to be the good guy, bad guy here. And Chris, I want to go off in a direction and say this to you.
Okay.
So a lot of people do complain to us that this isn't solid 35 millimeter. Well, here's the deal. Every time you show one of those films, could be the last time you ever see it in 35 millimeter. They're that old, and it could be the end. So these people that are purists of that need to realize that the collectors, when they're giving these out, distributing these, because much of this is now from collectors, you know, that could be the last time they ever lend the film to make a dollar off of it. And the quality that you're seeing, I don't understand this whole thrill. Unless you're sitting there watching the reel-to-reel go in the projection booth, you're not seeing the film as it appeared in 1970. It didn't have vinegar syndrome. It didn't have all of the degradation problems. So
unless they strike a new print. So, like, you're talking about extreme circumstances.
We used to,
I mean, don't forget, we've been doing this almost 20 years. We've shown, like, dozens and dozens of 35 prints. And we've basically exhausted everything that's out there.
Correct.
And we've had some prints that are like real nightmares. Now with the studios making these new scans available, like I was saying, Death Dream and Messiah of Evil are part of a new theatrical run, a theatrical re-release. And they're making them available. And of course I'm going to show them, because this is what we want to show. These are the films we want to show. You know,
you can go, I'm sure you're aware, and if not, you can look on the drive-in, you know, our page, our Facebook page. It's so much more convenient to do DCP because these canisters weigh 1,000,000 pounds and they take up so much space. If you can imagine the amount of space that Todd loses in the projection booth when you do 8 movies a weekend. So there was all of that cost and all of that.
Well, and it's also a matter of there's so much more available now. I mean, because of that, we were able to keep going. You know, we're able to keep going because they're making so much available to us.
Correct.
And repertory, you know, with drive-ins and regular hardtop theaters and classic vintage theaters.
Sure.
They've made so much more stuff available now that, I mean, you know, I won't stop doing this show until the Riverside says, you know, we're not going to do it anymore. You know, there's just so much. Even if we bring back something we've shown already here or there, there's, like, going forward, there's going to be so much more we could be showing. I mean, September, for example.
And better quality, too.
Better quality. But, like for example,
20 years ago, they didn't look this good when they were originally shown at Montserrat, and now they're pristine.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting 8 pristine quality films for $15 per night, which is, you know, highway robbery. We could be doing a lot more financially higher, you know, ticket prices. When you go to New York or anywhere, you're paying $20 plus for one of these films, let alone the cost has been kept down to 15 per night for 4 films, you know, on a drive-in screen, which is, in my opinion, better than a theater. So this is such a unique event, you know, you can't complain about it.
Right.
You just can't.
Yeah.
It's the best pairing of all things, you know, into one evening, you know?
So much available now that we could show that, like, September, for the upcoming September event, I'm having a hard time narrowing down, you know, like, the schedule.
But he's got some good plans. We talked about this last week, and he's got some really good stuff. I'm not going to say that is coming up for September. The way it's shaping up is pretty good. So you guys are going to love that.
Awesome.
Nice. And like, yeah, you sort of touched on it a little bit, but what goes into, like, do you have to gain the exhibition rights to show these films? Like, how does that piece work to gain access to these films?
Yeah, they're all the license from the studio, and that includes the rights.
Okay.
So, you know,
gotcha.
You know, there's different. And different films, you know, it varies them depending on where they're coming from,
sure.
Where the studio's coming from.
Right.
I'm not going to say which one's more expensive because, they, you know, but only because I don't want to, you know, I don't want anybody, but I mean, there are like some that are a lot more than others, but that, you know, that's okay because if it's something we want to show, you know, like two of the big ones this April are like are pretty pricey, but they're headliners. So to give you that idea, basically just told you that the two headline films on Friday and Saturday are expensive.
And that's to be expected. You know, I mean, they're more, of course, more widely known too. So
yeah, and sure. I wanted with this April, I wanted it to be like a you know, popularity contest. I wanted pop more, you know, popular stuff, because we last April we did a kind of slasher weekend, which went well, but it wasn't like it was kind of like, I would say, lower tier slasher films. Not I'm not talking about the films, you know, critical way. They weren't just as popular. Like, we didn't consider them like popular as, you know, they were like maybe like more under the radar kind
of
stuff.
Like Edge of the Axe.
They were not the top 40
Exactly. Like, we showed Edge of the Axe, a couple of years ago, but like last year, you know, something like Silent Madness, you know, things like that.
That's right. Yeah.
The Slumber Party Mask, those kind of things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just wrap up Friday here. The Friday, the 26th of April, you've got the fourth film is The Children from 1980, which I remember seeing this originally. I think it was on Elvira.
Oh, nice.
Really?
But, yeah. I remember her going
to the theater,
commenting about the kids.
I saw it on HBO. George and I both saw it on HBO. I don't think you didn't see it in the theater, did you, George? The Children?
No. I didn't see it in the theater.
I didn't either. We missed it for whatever reason when it was out, and it came and went. I mean, people.
Yeah, I don't remember even playing. I don't remember even playing or seeing TV spots or anything like that.
I was going to say to you guys, it was a different world back then. I always tell. I don't know what your ages are respectively, but back in the 80s and before the 90s, the late 70s and the early 80s, there were so many films coming out, just dozens and dozens, which is obviously reflective on the market now with Blu-rays that are available and whatever. And it was hard to keep up with having the ability to see five different Sword and Sorcery films a weekend or every other week. And they were pumping out horror films the same way. So you had like The Children, you had Silent Scream, The Boogans. You had all these movies that now get recognition on Blu-ray and 4K and everything, and seem the people today that are watching these didn't live through that decade.
Yeah.
So they don't know about how these films were just, they were literally shit out constantly. That was like, what are we going to do this weekend? Oh, there's like another movie. You just, you know, you couldn't keep up with it a lot, and it had to become a rental. But I mean, this is what the market was like. Now we don't have that market anymore. We have a lot more larger blockbuster, big deal films today, right? With a lot of CGI and everything. But back then, what would have maybe been what happens now with Tubi and Shudder and all these, you know, these streaming services where they're getting all these films like every month.
Yeah.
We were getting those in the theater back in the day, which that's, you just didn't get out to the theater to see these films the way that, you know, I think people, but like George was saying, for instance, with Slumber Party Massacre 2, to me, that was some ripoff piece of shit, literally, that was on a wall in a rental store. You know what I mean? Both of them was like, oh my God, what is this crap? Now it has the social relevance as a class A horror film, because those folks didn't exist in the period where we were inundated with so many films that you literally had to say, this is what I'll see, this is what I'll see, this is junk, this is junk, this is a rental. That it was a different world back then with distribution and what was available to see. So The Children came and went like in a week. It was here and it was gone. It was like, okay. So then HBO would get these films like, what, George, 6 months later or a year?
Yeah, they were on pretty quickly, and they'd be premiering them on Friday and Friday and Saturday nights. They, I remember them, they'd show a lot of the horror films.
Yeah.
From the we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s period, where it's just like, there was like a flood of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember it well. Mm.
The Children was one of those films. The Children was one of those films. And I have loved this film for years. And it was a film that I screened and I've shown to a lot of people, and they didn't even know it existed. And the whole concept of it's such a great cheese ball concept. There's a toxic cloud of gas which accidentally gets released, and the bus goes through it, and the children turn into zombies. And not only are they zombies, but they hug you to death, and they have black fingers. like fingernails.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. It's a very weird concept. It's not just a normal zombie film. It's really strange.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, they hug you to death. What the hell is that about?
Right.
That's pretty goofy, but kind of sinister. Again, Roger, so that you don't sleep tonight, think about a nightmare where someone's trying to touch you or hug you, and you don't want them to do it, and they're relentless. You keep pushing them away, you know?
Oh, I'm going to have that tonight as a dream.
Yeah.
There you go. Sleep alone. Lock that door.
That's funny. So on Saturday, April 27th, you've got another four movies, which is awesome. And of course, as we mentioned before, The Killer Clowns from Outer Space from 1988 is the headliner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, my grandson, 7, he loves this movie. And I love the creativity that's involved. And Chris, didn't we interview the guy that made the soundtrack or the score?
We did. Yeah, we did. We interviewed John Bizzari, who incidentally also did the score for Wizard of Speed and Time, which is a movie I love. Got to meet him in person, actually, like 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah. This is just one of those.
Well, Killer Clowns is like, yeah, it's got a this is a franchise film. This
yes.
film has, this is like one of those films, and Gene will attest to this, that I remember working in a video store in 1988 or so when it was new.
Nothing.
And it was like a, I remember somebody asking for it, like if we had it for rent, I get, because it was like straight. I remember hearing the title, and like the sales girls there were like, I don't know, what, we don't know what that is. We didn't even carry it because,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it was like that's, and it. I don't even remember this movie playing like on being
no,
a popular VHS rental
yeah.
or being on cable a lot. Now, like
not
in only in recent years, it's a franchise.
Yeah.
You look out there, and they only, it's amazing they only did one, but there's so many, there's so much merchandise. It's
yeah.
so popular. And I mean, it's like I went into Spirit Halloween last year getting stuff from my gift basket, which is themed on Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And I'm talking to all these young girls that are working there, and they're like, oh, you're a fan of Killer Clowns? I'm like, well, I need stuff for a gift. It's like, you know, they know this film. They weren't even born yet. And
yeah,
it's amazing that, and that's, and again, this is like the reason why this is a headline film.
It was
because,
a video rental. It was something that yeah. we saw.
But it's very popular. And it's a, and again,
really
it's a crowd pleaser.
People rent it. Right.
It it's was a crowd pleaser. And now it's a crowd pleaser. It's a huge, this is a film with a huge cult following.
Right.
It's a yeah. franchise film with one film, and it's just merchandised to death. And yeah,
I remember reading about it in Fangoria, and then I worked at Blockbuster Video in 1988, and I definitely rented it as soon as it came out because I had to see it, and I loved it ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. Wasn't it one of the midnight movies from Sony, George, or am I crazy?
Yeah, from MGM.
Yeah.
They put out like a midnight movie.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
Now it's I think...
with Strange Invaders, wasn't it?
It might have been. I thought it was released by itself.
It was, yeah.
So Strange Invaders came out with Warrants from Outer Space.
Yeah. It was,
I think.
You're correct.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Yeah.
Or maybe, no. Strange Invaders, I think, was a single as well. Unless they double featured them. Like, sometimes they would re-release them as double features, but
yeah.
I think Killer Clowns
right.
stood on its own because it was, even on the DVD, it was a special edition. Now, Scream Factory's announced this like 4K special edition that's coming out in a few months.
I am so excited for that release.
Yeah. yeah. So it's like the legacy. It's just this film is just done. This film does not die. This is just.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think
isn't it? Are they doing like a video game of it or something or something else is happening around
stuff.
It?
There's all kinds of merchandise.
Well, the vinyl soundtrack was released. I like just recently. They the composer also
which
released.
Which is mind boggling to me.
I
That's
know.
Mind boggling.
Yeah.
That is just mind-boggling, and that we George and I talk about this. I'm always, I get all the emails from Fright Rags and from Trick or Treat and all that stuff. I mean, and I'll see this like board game coming for Silent Night, Deadly Night or something, and I'll send it to George and go, "Are you effing kidding me?" Or there's a board game for My Bloody Valentine. Again,
I want a Silent Night Bloody Night board game with John with Death
with mute John Carradine ringing that bell. That's what I want.
Yeah, Bloody Night. Well, you know, I always get the titles mixed up. But, you know, and the thing about it is that when, again, let's call attention to this for like 1 second. My Bloody Valentine ran with no fanfare whatsoever, okay? Mm. It came, it played, it left. It was one of the 1 million Halloween holiday slasher films, which came out, you know, right after Halloween was popular. There was a rush to make every holiday a horror film, honestly. And, you know, we liked that film, but it was not something that I would have sat in 1982 and thought, there's going to be a board game for this film or an action figure 30 years from now. If you're younger, and this is part of the whole merchandising like he's talking about with, you know, Killer Clowns, to us, this is mind-boggling because this is not something that you would have ever imagined on any level would have existed in the future in 1982. It was just another film. That's it.
As a real quick aside here, I may have told this story before on the show, but my parents took me to see My Bloody Valentine at the drive-in when it came out, and they started the movie too early, and it was still kind of light out, so you couldn't see anything, and people started leaning on their horns, so they finally stopped it and then started it up again a little while later when it was darker. And then, you know, fast forward to, I don't know how many years ago, not too long ago, a buddy of mine and I went to watch the remake with Jensen Ackles from Supernatural in it, and it was supposed to be in 3D, and the 3D wasn't working at the beginning of the movie, and I got up and I had to tell the usher, and I handed him my glasses, and then he puts them on, and he goes, oh my God, it's not in 3D, and he hands them to his buddy, and they're like, oh crap, we got to go tell the manager, and we all got free movie passes.
Was this the one that was filmed the Katanning in Pittsburgh here, right? With Tom Atkins? Is that what we're talking about?
My Bloody Valentine.
The sequel, right? But we're not sequel, the remake.
Jeez, I can't even remember. I just remember Jensen Ackles being in it. It was a very forgettable movie.
Yeah, I think that was the one that was filmed here in Pittsburgh. There was one with Tom Atkins that was filmed here in Pittsburgh and actually in Katanning, which was the area where the bridge was, it actually doubled for the Mothman Prophecies movie with Richard Gere. That is also another Pittsburgh area film that a lot of people, you guys aren't from Pittsburgh, so you don't see these films being made here. Every day when I leave work, they are filming something different here in some certain part of the city, and all the giant trucks are there, and it's unbelievable the amount of film production. We're doing what is the famous show that's like a mafia thing? The Mayor of Kingstown or something? Is that what it's called? That's currently in production here right now. And every day they're in this one particular area is all the courtesy trucks and the makeup, RV things and everything. It's a big production. There's like three or four movie studios here in Pittsburgh. A lot of people are not aware of that. They produce so much shit here for Netflix and for the streaming services, Hulu and stuff. It's crazy. Wow. There's so much filmed here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
Because Pennsylvania offers a tax credit for film production. It's cheaper to bring the studios here to do satellite studios in Pennsylvania and film here than it is to film in Hollywood. It's cheaper.
Right.
It's just cheaper. So, yeah, even with them staying here, it's cheaper, which is a crazy thought, but it is, you know?
Mm. So the second movie you guys are playing on Saturday, April 27th, is one of my favorites, Escape from New York from 1981, which...
With Tom Atkins, of course.
Yep, Tom Atkins and Adrian Barbeau and Ernest Borgnine, Kurt Russell, directed by John Carpenter, right. Lee Van Cleef. I mean, this is one of my favorites. I saw this at the drive-in when it came out.
Ernest Borgnine.
It was paired with The Exterminator. I think last time we kind of talked about this, and George, you thought it might not have gotten a drive-in theater release, but it did because I found the ad, and I'll post that in the show.
Oh no, that was definitely. I wasn't talking about. You must be thinking of something else.
Maybe.
I wouldn't have thought that didn't get a drive-in release. Escape from New York. I'm positive it did. Yeah.
But what a fun double feature that was.
Escape from New York is like it's probably my favorite Carpenter film. And it's a lot of fun. It's a post-apocalyptic This is another film that was ripped off to death. In fact, we have a bunch of trailers of like the Escape from New York, Mad Max ripoffs that most of them came up from Italy.
Yeah.
This is one of, again, like what I'm saying is this is one of those films where, you know, the Italians just like went crazy ripping it off.
Yeah.
And this will go into more into our next film that we're talking about. But Escape from New York, again, it's another one Gene and I discussed showing for many years.
For a long time.
I've been planning a science fiction. I was like thinking about doing a whole science fiction weekend, but I'm like, well, let me just, this, so it, long story short, it just became that, you know, let's do a sci-fi Saturday. We have all these space and apocalypse. So Escape from New York fits perfect because, again, it's Carpenter, it's a crowd pleaser, it's like, it's an iconic movie. Like we see in the trailer, it's Kurt Russell's iconic role as Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
And, but what more can you say about this one?
Third,
yeah.
It's the third big, if you grew up with, you know, I saw the Carpenter films as they came out in the theater, okay? And it was the third big one because Halloween was hot. And then we saw, you know, The Fog, right?
The Fog,
so
yeah.
We're sitting back in that time period and we're thinking, what's John going to do next? And here comes Escape from New York. And, you know, we all were like big Carpenter fans. And then we went to see it. And it's like, holy shit. So that's three movies in a row that are absolutely very much iconic films. You know,
and it wasn't that well received, right, when it came out. It wasn't critical. I remember the late night show Fridays, which was like with Michael Richards and that was a late night thing on ABC. That was, you know, it was a Saturday night.
Was ABC the answer to Saturday Night Live? Correct.
But Fridays did this little skit called Escape from New York. So that's to show you. I mean, that was like the mindset.
What?
Yeah, I don't know if it's on YouTube, but you know, they did like this trailer, like for a movie called Escape from New York.
What?
In other words, you're in the theater and you have to try to escape from the movie.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I kid you not. I remember this like it
was
yesterday.
Funny.
Yeah, and it's probably out there. I think Fridays, I think they released some of them on DVD, or they're probably ones on YouTube. I'm always looking for Fridays things on YouTube, and sometimes they're hard to find, but.
Yeah,
but what I was saying is it wasn't really that well received when it came out. It just, again, it became popular on this. This is a film that I think became popular on cable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's just so iconic now, you know, especially with the poster, yeah, with the Statue of Liberty on the ground and all that.
You know, so, and then you had a sequel and everything.
Yeah. We won't bring that one up.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's definitely not a fan favorite. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So then next up, you've got Star Crash from 1978, which is directed by Luigi Cozzi, and it's got Marjo Gortner, Caroline Monroe, Christopher Plummer. What's not to like about this movie? I love it. It's batshit crazy.
David Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff, that's right.
Joe Spinell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have a very funny background story about that. So I've had the pleasure over the last 20 years to spend a lot of time with, and this is going to, again, please guys, don't, this is not an ego discussion. I've had a lot of contact with Caroline Monroe and many shows, and she's a wonderful woman. Her daughter is fantastic. In fact, she's coming back to Pittsburgh at Monster Bash this year. And I've had all these things to talk about with her, just crazy things in her career. And I said, what the hell was the deal with Star Crash? And it was supposed to be more than one movie. They had initially wanted to do multiple films, like Star Wars.
Hmm.
Yeah, the Stellar Star character that she played. Yeah,
exactly. And it didn't happen, but she was saying that Christopher Plummer and some of the bigger names were flown in and only shot for like one day or two. This is sort of like the standard guerrilla filmmaking for Italian films.
Yeah.
But the thing that I said, well, you know, it's kind of a goofy film. And she says to me, she said, Gene, it was a vacation in Italy. Why would I ever say no? That's what she said. She said, the food was fantastic. The locations were fantastic. It was a paid vacation. And She goes, I don't think it's that bad of a film, but it's kind of an oddball film. And I said, yeah. And I just thought that was a great background story, because when you see this movie, you see kind of how it flows. I always felt the film, and including with the giant golden statue robot thing, I always thought this kind of was like a Harryhausen, kind of like Jason and the Argonauts meets Star Wars kind of thing. I mean,
well, it's a Star Wars ripoff, but like you said, it does definitely have Harryhausen ingredients. Yeah,
right.
But this is like, and this is considered, yeah, but this is considered the best of the Star Wars ripoffs. Again, this is an Italian. The Italians ripped off Star Wars, and some of the there's a bunch of these films directed by his anglicized name is Al Bradley. It's like his Italian name. I can't even pronounce it. Sure. If you have to look it up, but he made these movies like War of the Robots and and I mean, it's like if you ever read the Psychotronic book, if you look up Planet of the Vampires, the little capsule review reads something like, you know, most Italian science fiction films are about as exciting as watching a blank screen. And that'll tell you,
I don't know about that. I mean,
I don't know about that either, but it definitely applies to some of these late 70s Star Wars ripoffs. I mean, they're fun. I mean, I watch them. I probably have most of them, but they're really bad. This one, that's Japanese, but Star Crash is, it's entertaining. You could call it a bad movie. Well, I'm not going to be critical because, you know, critics are like, you know what, but it's a fun bad movie, I guess, if you want to call it a bad movie. But it is considered like the best of the Star Wars ripoffs. And this has a surprisingly big cult reputation, this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a big cult for this movie, and you go look it up and you'll see that it's out there. So and I've seen people on the Riverside's page when they have over the years, like when we've advertised the Monster Arms, like, why don't you do a science fiction show? You know, meaning that they want to see like stuff like Star Wars. Well, here you go. Here's your Star Wars. It's a Italian Star Wars ripoff. So
yeah, you're never getting Star Wars in a Monster Arms, yeah, guy. Sorry.
We're not dealing with Fox and all that. That's so funny. Well, you know, it's like, yeah.
And then your final film on Saturday, the 27th, is Galaxy of Terror from 1981. I have to say, I don't think I've seen this one. This is one of the few ones I have not seen.
Good for you.
Oh, well, I'll be there to watch it live. But is Roger Corman?
No, this is actually fun. This is a fun one. It's kind of gritty, right?
I just recently rewatched it with my partner Tim, and it was actually entertaining, but initially when I saw the film, I just didn't want anything to do with it. Is he again?
Okay, this is one that I saw on HBO. This falls into what, because HBO had like all the New World films. Both Star Crash and Galaxy of Terror are New World, you know, Roger Corman's New World pictures. Actually, a little sideline. Star Crash is supposed to be released by American International Pictures, but for some reason they didn't, and then New World picked it up and like a year after it was made. So but getting back to Galaxy of Terror, it's another New World. This was like the Roger Corman did all these like space, I guess they were more like alien ripoffs by this point.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of these. There was a bunch of these, and this, I think this is the first one.
Excuse me.
And again, it's got an interesting cast. Aaron Moran from Happy Days is in it. Edward Albert, Eddie Albert's son, and Robert Englund in it, and Sid Haig, Ray Walston.
It, when you watch the movie, I think you kind of it's definitely a microverse that's been created by Corman, and I often wonder, watching this movie, with the amount of sort of background that was put into it, kind of like a Star Wars kind of thing, if there had been an intention for it possibly having sequels.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just feel that way. When you see
Roger Corman's real Star Wars ripoff was Battle Beyond the Stars.
Right.
Correct.
And I think this one might have Star Wars elements in it, like, you know, with a crew of a ship and, but I think by this point it was more, they were ripping off Alien.
It was a big Alien ripoff. It also,
you know, you got to remember the late 70s and early 80s was a time of Hollywood would put out like a big genre film, like a science fiction horror film that was huge, like Alien, like Star Wars. And we would get ripoffs from the United States. We get ripoffs from Italy. You get ripoffs from Japan. Japan ripped off Star Wars a couple of times.
Yeah.
You know, like Gene said, Message from Space, and there was another one, War in Space. It's another Star Wars ripoff.
Yeah.
So we were still in that, you know, era. And again, Escape from New York is another example of that. Like I said, there's a bunch of Italian ripoffs, and that kind of falls in with Mad Max, because Mad Max, I mean, that's an Australian film, but AIP distributed here was a big hit. And then The Road Warrior, and then again, they ripped, you know, like the post-apocalyptic, you know, with the guy with the long hair that looks like Michael Paré from a music video or something, running on a motorcycle and fighting these ogres and things, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is whole era. And then I think we have, like, good examples of that on Saturday's Sci-Fi Night.
Yeah.
It also, when the weird thing about that film, that, you know, this is something else that, again, you can check this out on maybe IMDb or Wikipedia, is that this was a film that was constantly changing its name. Like, it was going to be called Mind Warp and Affinity of Terror, Galaxy of Terror, Planet of Wars. He kept releasing these articles in Fangoria and Starlog saying this is his new movie and blah, 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 blah. And then he finally decided on Galaxy of Terror when it came out. It was like, okay, finally this film has an official title that we've been hearing about for like a year and a half. So that was one of the weird sort of stories about this, was how it underwent so many title changes over the course of its development.
It did.
That's funny. And let's not forget, I mean, the godfather of a lot of these sci-fi movies is Antonio Margheriti. You know, the Italian director, he did what, Wild Wild
Planet?
That
is exactly what I was going to bring up to you. Yeah. He was talking about people saying...
No, yeah, well, no, I like those. Yeah, no, I like those a lot. Yeah, I mean...
boring. I love the Snow Devils. I love Wild Wild Planet. I love Planets Against Us. And, of course, all...
War Between the Planets is probably the least of them. That one is kind of...
Right.
But, I mean, I just watched it again.
They tied into Green Slime as well, because...
The Gamma, yeah.
The Gamma Hydra Quadrilogy... Mm-hmm. Green Slime was an Italian Japanese American production,
right.
And it's the same sort of universe that Green Slime takes place in, and that's a big favorite of ours.
We love, like, we both have the little figures. I know he's got one, I got one, those little Green Slime figures. And...
That's awesome. That's
Well, this is a great lineup. Can you guys tell us about this year's giveaway?
I'm doing a raffle basket.
It's a Killer Clowns raffle basket.
Oh,
and it's pretty massive. And I've been working on it for a long time now. I hope to have it finished in another week or so, so we can put pictures up on the page. And
that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty massive. It's one of the bigger baskets that I've done.
Yeah. Because I remember last year was impressive.
We're very excited. But they're always impressive. He's what he does is absolutely insane. I mean, he's the out of control basket maker guy.
I have to really, I've learned a lot of tricks. You know, because you have to make a housing for all the items and then place them so that they're in view and they don't fall. You know, it's a lot of constructive work. So it's. I get very crafty, as I like to say.
Oh, and it's always chock full of Blu-rays and DVDs and action figures and all kinds of goodies. I love it.
That's impressive.
He shows up with these things, and you see them on the internet, but when you see them in person, it's like media overload. You go, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, there's so much. You can't focus. It's like if you have a problem focusing, don't look at his basket because your head will explode.
This one definitely applies to that theory,
Crazy, yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Beautiful stuff.
Well, George and Gene, as always, thanks for being guests on the show here. Just to remind folks, the 2024 April Ghouls Drive-In Monsterama event will be held at the Riverside Drive-In Theater in Vandergrift, Pennsylvania, on Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th.
Yeah, and it's also mentioned real quick here, I got interject super fast here before you wrap up.
Don't get any on me.
Thanks, yeah, I'm gonna vomit.
That's an SCTV joke.
Yeah, it is. a special thanks to the Riverside staff for everything that they do. You know, they really work tirelessly to make an event space that is successful with the show. So every year they work very hard and they sell the tickets. They've been helping over the last year and this year to help sell some of the shirts. So it's a big thanks to them. A big thanks to Lance Parkin, who does our trailers, which is spectacular. Of course, you work with Bill Van Ryn. Bill does our T-shirts and is sort of a street team person.
Bill Van Ryn, we were showing the children for Bill because he wanted that.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and I talked about it on the Fright Lounge.
Yeah, well,
I feel the need to throw it out there to those guys, too, because one thing that one part of the business plan that George and I see with this event and with fandom is that everybody is part of that world and that pie. So there's always a space for everybody's contribution and we're appreciative. It doesn't come down to what George does or what Gene does. That's really smart as much as it comes down to what everybody does. And we give equal representation to everyone that's involved with our events and the vendors, Bob from Time Space Toys, and Richie from Monster Mart, and we're adding a couple of new people this year.
Nice.
Vendors this year. So it comes down to all these folks. Creepy Classics has been there every year for Monster Bash. Everything is an integral part of the success of this event. It's not just about the showrunners, us, but it's about everything that everybody brings to this stage that makes it part of what it is. This sounds like an Oscar speech, but listen, thank you for what they do. And even the people that come and attend this, if it wasn't for the constant attendance every year and the word of mouth and everything, we wouldn't have the success to be on your show right now and do what we're doing. And that's the legacy that we want to push forward and pay forward to the younger people out there. You can do shows like this, but it's not about you. It's about everybody's involvement in the community making it successful. So you're part of that, Roger and Chris. Thank you guys for being part of this whole big thing and helping us get the word out and everything. It's everybody's a part of something, and that's really important for us. So
yes,
thank you again.
Much appreciated. Much appreciated. Yes.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So I will put your Facebook link on the show notes so people know where to go to check it out. And hopefully if you're in the area, folks, check it and get to the Riverside Drive-In and you know, join us for the...
Well, even if you're not.
April Ghouls, yeah.
Just get there. I'm not in the area.
Awesome, awesome. Well, look forward to seeing you guys in person then. And
definitely.
We'll talk soon.
Chris, are we ever going to see Chris? I don't know where you live, Chris. Are you ever going to come to Montserrat?
I should one of these days. Yeah, no, I'm in Massachusetts. Are you as well?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe one day we'll get to meet you in person. And
that'd be great.
You won't regret your decision. I'll make sure of that. So.
Yeah, Chris, we could do a live show from there, you know?
That'll be fun.
Oh,
yeah.
God, that's what we need.
That'll be welcome. That'll be welcome, yeah.
Awesome.
All right,
awesome.
Like that.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Right, take care. Have a lovely night.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
Good night.
Cheers.
Well, folks, thank you for joining us once again. Now, Chris, can you tell the listeners where to find you online?
Sure. I am at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Stories in Motion. You can also check out my website, which is storiesmotion.com, and there you'll find all my latest projects and all the things I have coming up.
Excellent, excellent. That's great. And folks, don't forget to check out our redesigned website at havenpodcasts.com and let us know what you think. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode. Class dismissed. See, I do terrible when I ad lib. It's like
that's okay. No worries.
All right, let's jump to the outro.
It gives it an authenticity, you know?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I suppose. That's what I should tell myself.
Right, exactly.
Because I just don't want people tuning in going, this guy can't fucking speak.
That's funny.
Oh, my God. All right, let's jump to the outro here. It's real. Okay. I kept it short and sweet.
That's okay. All right.
Now podcast is intended for entertainment, educational, and informational purposes only. Sounds, music, and clips played during this podcast are the property of their copyright holders. All original content is copyright Jupiter Media.
For more shows like the one you just heard, check out the Dorkening Podcast Network at thedorkening.com.